What can I say about today's guest? Sora is an old friend of mine. We met through the magic of B-School, and she was there for me at probably one of the worst times of my life, when the Office Collective was collapsing. Sora and I had connected online, and I invited her to run one of her first women's circles in my space. And she's just been a source of inspiration and friendship and love and connection. And I adore this woman. She is like a ray of sunshine, but she's also not afraid to explore her deeper side and her darker side. She is like, we kind of are like two peas in the pod. I just love her. Anyway, enough crapping on about our wonderful, amazing friendship. And let me introduce you to Sora Suryano.
Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
So has there ever been a moment in time when you just thought you knew your shit? Like, as if everything landed itself out and your ego was just telling you that you were in perfect alignment. Well, that time for me was when I was about 27 years old. I was living abroad and I had entered the spiritual path. And again, a woman who is now in the world of magic, I felt like at the age of 27, I knew it all. And I thought that all of those poor people out there who was misguided and misrepresented and knew nothing about meditation or yoga or the goddesses or energy work, they were blinded by everyday life, and I was going to save them all. Well, that's just a bit of a laugh.
Oh, dear. That right? Never turns out well.
I was on such an ego high. It was ridiculous. And if you knew me back then, you would say that I was incredibly sweet, incredibly open, all of that stuff. And yes, there was definitely that part of me. But there was another part of me that thought I just knew it all. It's the fiery energy in me that I just felt like I had figured out the messages and the mysteries of life, and I was going to share it. So as soon as I came to that profound but so inaccurate understanding of myself is when the universe decided to cast upon a little bit light upon what I truly needed to do, which was to be humbled. And so at the age of 27, I had an experience where five men came out of a car and tried to kidnap me. And what I realized during this time, it was one of the most actual empowering times of my life. Because if we go back even further, since the age of probably five, I was obsessed with this idea of being a superhero and rescuing and saving the earth and the planet and wondering if I had any superpowers that would do so, that would allow me to be able to save the planet. And after a number of years later, probably in middle school into high school, and then as an adult, I started to get really curious about this idea of within someone, do you freeze, do you run, or do you fight? And we hear so many different stories about that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I, though, was really obsessed with this idea. And so with that being said, it makes a lot of sense at this age of 27 to have this humbling experience where I had to learn how to save myself in a situation where I couldn't use my brain. I couldn't actually use really any logical sense of my voice, and that I would have to fight to get out of this very tricky situation. And what I realized about that was that No, one, I didn't manifest that shit. So if you're all thinking about in the spiritual context, because I thought about it so much that therefore I manifested it, I don't actually believe that's true. What I do believe, though, is that this experience was supposed to happen, and it happened in the most graceful way, even though it was a very traumatic way. But it was still actually quite filled with grace. And the reason being is that because of my path, I was able to pull myself out of the experience while living it and tell myself the best practices. You can call it your intuition and your guiding force. You can call it your angels. You can call it a higher being. You can call it God, the goddess, whoever. But there was a voice that spoke to me and led me through the entire experience.
Wow.
And so by the end of that, why I thought that was so amazing was not just the flair of this dramatic event that I can talk about and make people like ooh and ah and be at the edge of the seat of their pants, because it's actually not that part that I think is really transformational. The transformational bit was, one, that I realized I was a fighter. So it empowered me to realize that I was quite a warrior, that even at a small frame of 5'1" and having been told to never use my voice because I have an Asian background, that I was able to use my voice, scream and fight, and knew that no matter what, I was going to die fighting. And that even if my life was going to be taken, it was going to be on my own terms. And so the reason that was really valuable is now, as an entrepreneur, I recall and remember that I can do anything. So even in the midst of all fears, of all expectations, of all thoughts that I am going to be bankrupt and I'm not going to be able to support myself and who's going to really want to purchase my service and all of the things that causes fear when one has their own business, I know at the end of the day, it doesn't actually matter, because I will be able to go blazing on my own terms, that I can create the experience that I so choose. And so through that, to be able to remember that I am an empowered soul and being, that I do actually have the answers in me, and to actually tangibly see that by having a voice share with me one step at a time what I needed to do to save myself. The other lesson I realized is I don't need rescuing. And for F's sake, no one else needs rescuing, ever.
Yeah.
Right? And that was so humbling to realize that it was as if the universe had a sense of humor in showing me how I didn't need to be saved, how I was able to do it myself, caused me to be incredibly in reverence to human beings and their willingness to actually live life. And no matter where they are, no matter what experiences that they're having, to never take pity on anyone, but instead to trust and have a firm belief that they will go through it and they could still find joy. They can still find beauty, grace, and feel abundant in their life without ticking off the checkpoints of what makes someone rich or successful or, I don't know, have the best life ever. Whatever that definition is, it's not based on other criteria except within your own way of being, which actually is quite abundant and can be filled with a lot of joy.
So true. You know, the whole pity thing, it's, I had this situation, back in, it was about a year ago, a little under a year ago, where things were just so not going my way. And I remember walking through the city of Melbourne. I might have said this to you the other day when we were having lunch, actually. Yeah, and I was in Melbourne, and all of the homeless people who usually have, you know, they have a tent city kind of thing, it had been shut down, and they were all sleeping in doorways in the actual city, in shop doors. And usually there'd be a sense of pity from me, but instead what I saw was, okay, even if it got to the point where I had no roof over my head and I had no means to pay my rent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I could still make it through a night. These people aren't, like, they're incredibly strong people. And for me to have felt pity for them is actually really disempowering to them. Who am I to say how someone can choose or not choose to live? You know, some of those people some of those people are definitely there by choice. And who am I to project my own shit onto them? So it's a really interesting concept, isn't it? When you take full responsibility for where you are, with the knowing that wherever you go, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing about that is learning to be aware about the context of how you speak and what words you put into it, right? And so that's what I was noticing about myself when I was judging other people based on where they were at in their spiritual path when I was in my 20s. And Lynn Twist, part of who founded Pachamama Alliance, said this one thing to Oprah once when she was sharing her new book. And she said, people aren't poor. People aren't whatever label you put them in. People have a circumstance that they may be experiencing. So they aren't poor people. They are people who are in a poor circumstance. And I found that to be really true around how I formulate my words now and what I say. So therefore, a person isn't out of integrity. They might be having an experience at this moment where they are, or they're not angry people, but they are having an experience or there's a circumstance that's causing them to feel these emotions of deep anger and resentment. And I find that by switching that, that it allows me to really open up this place of being a sacred space holder, a person who can be compassionate no matter what is happening with a person or a community or a culture.
Yeah, that's so cool, because it's not who they are, you know? And then by doing that, you're also giving yourself permission just to move through shit and not label yourself, you know, as a person full of resentment or a person who can't get things right. You know, they're just, at that moment, maybe.
You know, yes.
You're feeling and resentment. Yeah, but you're not a resentful person.
Exactly. And there's a great conversation I had recently, or I was part of a group of women and they were having this conversation and I was more being the observer. And they were talking about introverts versus extroverts. And this dear sister was talking about how she had gone down this deep journey around understanding with curiosity what an introvert was. And she no longer wanted to have any labels, to no longer be placed in a box, and to no longer have that as a way in which we converse. And I took about 2 weeks to really uncover and unpackage what that meant for me. And what I noticed is that for me, I don't mind understanding labels or boxes, let's say, because what it does, it formulates a certain vocabulary. It gives me some guiding principles, right? And so even when it comes to, let's say, introvertedness, it gives me a guiding principle because I do fall into a lot of the rhythms and feels of what that is. And based on my own way of being, I can also understand and construct my own parameters to help me navigate life. So I understand not that I am an introvert, but when I tend to have more introverted qualities, or when I tend to desire to be in a more introspective state rather than being in a more extroverted outside of my own internal experience. And so that helps me move and flow with still having a container.
Yeah, I find the introvert extrovert thing quite interesting because I feel like I'm absolutely both. You know, there are times where I feel I get my energy from being alone, but then I'm also energized when I'm around other people. So it's like, the more stereotypical kind of view of being an introvert as being shy and socially awkward, you know, all those kind of things. I find it challenging myself because sometimes I feel like we can get that label and then become that label and use it as a crutch to excuse moving outside of our comfort zone.
Totally.
If you know what I mean. Yeah.
Oh, yes. We are so good at making excuses for ourselves. Brilliant.
So let's talk about your business journey. Have you ever had a traditional career? What did you do when you left school?
Sure, yes. And my business is what it is now. because of what I experienced before, just so that there is that little tie, so that we know that that's there, that I wasn't randomly saying that. But before that, no, I went down the very traditional route. Went to a really great college, had a really amazing job. I was actually in fashion, but I was working for Gap Corporate in the Bay Area and learned a whole great deal of different aspects of the business, and then continued to thrive and bought my first apartment. So all the things that you were supposed to do. But what happened was I am very, very connected with my lower back. It seems to be the thing that tells me when things are all sorts of out of whack. And my back gave out. And that was the first time that I realized that by staying still for just a moment, I could tell how unhappy I was and how much of my life was designed to be a false life being lived by someone who I thought I was expected to be without truly understanding and knowing who I was. And so that was when I went on a personal journey. But what was fascinating was even after that, and after traveling down to South America, I chose again a traditional route. It was as if I didn't fully trust in my ability to co-create what it was that I desired. So I always had a crutch. And so I went and got two masters. I became a teacher. I went abroad and taught in American schools and international schools. And I still used it as a crutch because I knew that I was great at teaching and I loved traveling. And any sane person would have to figure out a way to be able to do that and make a living. And so it never occurred to me to go outside of the box in that way. So absolutely, I had many traditional jobs, even after that, having worked in design firms and other things.
And was spirituality always a big part of your life?
No, I grew up with none of that at all. I never had any mentors or family members who guided me on the spiritual path. There was religion and there was Sunday school. But most of that was actually not because my parents were quite religious, but my dad actually would go to church and just fall asleep. He was not religious whatsoever. But it was actually because they wanted me to have a tie to my Korean culture and to learn the language and to commune with other Korean kids. And that was the only time I had access to that. Besides that, most of my time was actually spent really immersed in the American culture because my parents really wanted to make sure that I was American first and Korean second. So spirituality was never a thing until my back gave out, and my entry point, my gateway, was actually yoga.
Right. Okay. And so this all happened while you were working the good job, living the American dream.
Yes, totally. The only thing I needed to have done was, the only thing I needed to have done by that point was get married, but I had refused to do that at that point.
And so I guess then you just found yourself on a yoga mat.
I did, and very disgruntledly. Like, I did not want to do yoga whatsoever. I had no idea why anyone would want to do it. And it was only because my back was hurting so much, and it was advised that if I was really going to make sure that I wasn't in such incredible pain, that I needed to work on my core and my back, did I go? And I fell in love with it. It's one of those things where when you resist so much and you persist and then you do it and you realize this was exactly what you needed and how liberating it is afterwards. But boy, do you create such a fight and a resistance before. Yeah, that was yoga for me.
So what did yoga teach you?
Yoga taught me about my breath. So what, and I find that to be the most simplest and most profound practice. So by sitting on a mat, not even the crazy poses yet, I did get really addicted and could do all those crazy things. But prior to that, it was literally sitting on the mat and learning how to just be with myself. And until that point, I actually never did that. I never sat and just listened to my thought or noticed my emotion or noticed how my body was feeling. I was so disengaged. And so it allowed me the opportunity to really understand what it looks like and feels like, not only by being present to the moment, but by being present from within, from bringing yourself back into your body and experiencing everything through your own eyes, not outside of your body through an outside eyes. And so that helped me learn that breath was the most magical alchemical practice or device we have in our bodies, because through our breath, we can expand time, we can quicken time, we can stop time for a moment, we can listen more, we can engage with ourselves. And that practice is what has helped me survive endless amount of different encounters that could have been tricky.
From the yoga mat, how do you go from the yoga mat to full, you know, running a business that is fully spiritual?
Yeah, full on.
Yeah. Yeah, full on spiritual. Woo as fuck.
Yes, totally. So true, and I embrace the F out of it.
Totally.
True. So what I notice is that we all have this way of weaving our journeys. And when we take a moment and we look back at what experiences we've had, it is an incredibly intricate, beautiful tapestry. It is a design that no one but a god or goddess could have possibly have created. And that's what we do. And I think it's extraordinary. And so, yes, being on a mat was just being on a mat, but it was so much more than that. And I think what happened was it allowed me to feel better. Like, I actually could feel the difference in myself, whereas before I was just so numb. I didn't know if I was feeling good or not good. And then once I was able to do that, that's when I realized how unhappy I was. And by, like many people, I'm sure you can count endless amount of people who have gone through this, including probably maybe yourself, is that when you realize you're unhappy, you realize something needs to happen, something needs to change. And then you go on this self-discovery journey. You go on a quest to figure out yourself and figure out what's going on with you, why you've created this person that you are now and who you essentially are. What is your core essence? And so for a number of years, that's what I did. Just one step at a time, one journey at a time. For me, it was traveling that helped me reconnect with me. For others, it may be another way. But for me, for sure, it was yoga, traveling, and living elsewhere so that I was breaking the cycle of what my expectation was and also distancing myself a little bit from my beloved parents and my friends so I can really engage with myself.
Yeah. You see, like as an adult who has been on the journey of figuring out who I am, removing myself from my familiar surroundings, you know, living somewhere else, figuring out, yeah, coming back to who I really am. When I go home, and I've noticed this is a bit of a thing because I've had a whole bunch of friends experiencing this lately. When you go home and you get a glimpse back into who you were expected to be, and you can see it so much clearer, and it's confronting, right? Because it's like,
yes.
What, yeah, like I went back for a friend's 40th and I could just see all of their questions about why I went so crazy, you know, in their eyes anyway. Like, why do I have the red hair? One of the women there, she had been talking to me about my retreats and she said, I was thinking about running one down there. And she had said, oh yeah, there's plenty of weirdos around here. And it just reminded me of like why it was such a good move for me to like lose physically those tethers to who I used to be so that I could find myself and be really strong in that before I went back, you know, and had all my good work undone by just falling in line again. So that sense of self can be really confronting too, right? Like when you were talking about sitting on the yoga mat, I so remember when I first started on my own quest, being so deathly afraid of being alone, you know, like I would do anything to avoid being with myself. And being with myself was the greatest gift that I ever gave myself and continue to now, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is, I remember how hard it was to be by myself at first and how confronting, and how now on the other side, it is one of the most amazing, yummy things I could ever do for myself. And sometimes I get so caught up into it, I need to pull myself out and actually go see people.
Yeah, I feel you. So where did the business journey, where did you shift from being an employee and a I guess a good girl to turning your newfound sense of self and this new path into something that would sustain you financially and all the other ways, of course?
Absolutely. It's a little bit probably of a different journey than maybe some people regarding. Even when I had a full-time job or career, I constantly had this insatiable appetite to learn more. And I know many people have that. So really addicted to taking all the different courses. At that time, it was yoga and energy work. And I took everything possible. I think I've taken 3 yoga trainings, teacher trainings, to full completion. So crazy things like that. But actually what happened was after the attempted kidnapping, I had left the country and moved to another country. And I thought I was fine, right? Like everyone does, we're fine. And then it hit me and I didn't realize it. But for the next 2 years, I was going through post-traumatic stress and making choices that weren't actually in my highest good. But it was part of the journey, of course. And luckily, I had really lovely friends and an amazing partner who supported me through it. But I was batshit crazy. Like one day, I just decided to leave my job. No other reason, but because I was done with it, right? Like it just was one of those things and didn't have a plan, any of those things. But what was interesting was at that time, it wasn't the best choice to make. But that kind of feeling of I'm ready to do something else, or I'm motivated because this isn't bringing joy, is actually an energy I can tap into that has created success in my business. So it was really fundamentally interesting to watch me make certain choices and learn how my internal system works. But when in high traumatic situations and being in not fully grounded in my own essence and aligned with my own healing, did it go awry? So taking those as little markers helped me in my healing process. And so at some point, I was in a very toxic working relationship as a teacher, and I couldn't do it anymore. I was fully being bullied by this woman. And what I noticed one day was I woke up and realized that this bullying was something that had occurred ever since I was 7 years old. That I had been bullied by a dear sister and friend at 7, and I am being bullied yet again at the age of 30, 31 or 32. And that it was deeply hurting me and my ability to live life. And so that's when I went on, that's when I decided to have my own business. And of course, when timing is right and you have no idea how these things happen, it's when all of a sudden I got this information about something called B school, and I did it and realized I wanted to go off and be an entrepreneur. And I started to make really beautiful connections, found myself in where it was that I wanted to provide more for other people and create some change and impact based on all the things that I've learned. And that's how it shifted. It was from something that was traumatic and turning it around into a place of healing.
What did it look like? What did the business look like in those early days?
Yeah, so I was still in the midst of really huge healing, so it was not good. So again, by saying that was the second time I went, forget this, I'm quitting, and not having an alternative plan meant that for an entire year, I was in survival mode. Again, right? It was just another cycle and loop because I hadn't healed this idea that it was okay for me to forgive myself and that I can be safe no matter what. And so I was a yoga teacher and mindfulness teacher in schools, but I was literally running from one thing to another, feeling incredibly anxious around how I was going to purchase my next metro card and transport myself, to how I was going to eat my next meal. And it was awful. But the reason why also it was awful was I was so focused in being a lone wolf and not asking for any help and getting really quiet about my situation and hiding the fact that I was struggling. And it was only when I broke down and realized that I needed to share what was going on with me that gifts and experiences and new opportunities started to arise. So I would definitely suggest not to do it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. We know.
We do. Because I did exactly the same thing. Until I just couldn't physically take it any longer. And, you know, and it was so apparent that I was struggling because somebody would say boo to me and the throat would tighten and the tears would start welling in my eyes. And when you get to that point, there's no hiding it. It must come out. Otherwise, I guess it would manifest into some hideous kind of disease if it doesn't.
Yes.
But in letting it out, oh, so much freedom. And it has been the thing that you, leaning in to or learning to ask for help, though I'm not still practicing that. A lot, and being okay standing in my boundaries too, like that was something that I really struggled with as well, and definitely was the lone wolf. But what I realized was when I released everything that was inside, not quite everything probably, but you know, the huge amount of pain that I was going through at the time, what ended up happening was people stepped up to the plate, and they might not have helped me out financially, but emotionally they just held space for me, and that was all that was really needed. And then from there, you know, great relationships were formed and great bonds. And that was the reason that I'd gone into my co-working space, was for that connection. And I ended up getting it, but just not in the way that I would have chosen for myself.
Absolutely. And what's fascinating is also, I think sometimes we need that. We need to know what it looks like and feels like when something's really hard and we're just bashing ourselves against the wall. And then we get to learn our own unique way of softening into the receiving. And so for some, it might be leaning in. I know for me, though, energetically, what it felt like was not leaning in and not surrendering, but actually opening. Yes. When I could open myself up and just really be very open and tender and not even necessarily say anything, but just be open instead of closed, and I could feel the difference. But when I was open, because I could no longer be closed, it was so heavy, like I was pushing against the weight of the door. When I was open, that's when all of a sudden these amazing things would happen, including the connections and having the being gifted a different job and a different perspective and all of these things. And so that to me is such great learnings, but just fuck, it's challenging when it's happening.
Fuck. So challenging. when at the journey did we meet? At what point did we cross paths?
Yes. So we crossed paths after I realized that my business was not working. And so I was gifted the most amazing job at a design firm, and I learned a whole slew amount. And then after about a year after that, I started to get this sense that I was, one, I needed to go to Australia, and two, that I was supposed to hold women's circles. And I had no idea what that meant. I knew no idea why either one of them was coming into my awareness. And I said yes to both, that I was willing to start women's circles if the universe helped me provide a way and access to get to Australia. And so by the time I reached Australia is when we connected.
Yeah.
And then right after that is when shit has hit the storm for you.
Yeah. I think that was almost mid-storm, actually.
Mid-storm. There we go. Mid-storm.
I hadn't quite reached breaking point, but I was very quickly, hope was fading. And, you know, having you in the space and running that women's circle, was such a gift for me because, you know, I had spent so much time in that space feeling no sense of community. And so then to have you there with some women that I didn't know, some of them I did and some that I didn't, was just so lovely. It brought such a nice energy to a place that had felt, you know, like a noose around my neck a bit. So, right. Thank you for honoring that voice or whatever it was that told you to come here. 'Cause it was a really great experience.
Thank you. And again, it's one of those things where this is why I love sharing with other sisters, because our perspectives are different, right? And for me, I'm internally grateful for you, because I felt like you and the community in Byron was so deep and connected and so loving and so open to receiving the stranger who didn't know in the what she was doing. And it helped me trust the process and trust women again. And it was the reason why I needed to come here and why I'm so profoundly connected and love Australia so much, which is the people.
Yeah.
And so thank you.
My pleasure. The other thing that I want to thank you for, there was that after the, you know, the breaking open, I remember you offered to jump on a call with me and help me make some decisions about what the fuck I was going to do. And you had, and I say this so much in my podcast, you had asked me to close my eyes and imagine the Office Collective in its full glory, like buzzing, incredible, you know, just exactly as I had initially envisaged and intended it to be. And you asked me if that was worth what I was going through. And the answer was a very clear no. And so that call just gave me permission and a very clear way to move forward, because I was no longer attached to it needing to be anything, because even if it was, it wasn't what I needed anymore. And so, yeah. And so I just want to thank you for that too.
I love that, because to me, I feel like that's what's the power of having some really amazing sisters or soul family in your life. I say soul family rather than friends, because friends you can navigate in different capacities. But a soul family member is someone who's like really there invested in listening and not providing some sort of answer or expectation. And when you have someone like that who gives you permission to just really feel into what feels true for you, it opens a place that you didn't realize you can have access to. And we're sometimes so tunnel visioned. And I do this all the time. Like, I'm so focused on this one thing, and maybe it's not the right thing, but I've now put so much time and effort and heart into it. How could it possibly not be the right thing?
Yeah.
So yes to all of that, and to having a reason for us to have such a open, heartfelt communication and connection to make that occur.
And I think that's the great thing about going through really tough times is that, well, for me anyway, from my own experience, it does open me up to help, which I wouldn't have been open to had things been going okay. You know, it was the total annihilation of my ego that really helped me open up to, you know, guidance and allowing myself to be fully seen, not, you know, not with the mask on, which is a gift and scary too, but a real gift. So let's talk about where, like, you've been doing a lot of collaboration recently. So what, you've moved from, I guess, the lone wolf to someone who is, doing a lot of creative collaboration. How did that come about? How's that change occurred?
Well, it seems like whatever it is that I need to work on is what presents itself. Yeah. So when I identified that I was being such a lone wolf, and we've had this conversation, once I identified that I was constantly supporting other people, but I felt like it wasn't being returned, that there was a trigger there and a shadow quality that I needed to look at, which was, why is it that I feel like I need to always support others and shine their light and focus on them, and then feel invisible when it came to myself? And it wasn't even this idea of intentionally sharing someone and expecting them to return the favor. It wasn't that, but it was this idea of karmically, if I continue to give, won't it come back to me?
Yes.
And it wasn't. It wasn't happening. And I thought, this law and this principle is actually not working for me, so there must be a reason. And the reason is because for me, I was not allowing it to happen. I was turning myself into this invisible creature and then blaming other people and talking about how they didn't understand sisterhood or collaboration or partnership, when actually I was the one in control of my life and I was the one who was creating this. Again, we are such powerful beings. And so based on that, I decided to really learn what it looked like and felt like to be in collaboration, in partnership, not just being as a guest, but 50-50 partnerships. And can we move through conscious, heartfelt, open conversations? Can we move through any wounding? And can we just show up all the time? And the reason why this was so important to me, because those are all the areas that everything in me wants to run away from. I don't want to confront. I don't want to have honest conversations. I don't want to talk about my feelings. I don't want to listen to feedback around where I'm hiding, right? All these things, but you have to do it in partnership.
Yes. So true. Yes. Yes, 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 yes. You absolutely do. There are going to be partnerships that you have that don't feed all of those boxes. And then there's going to be some that do. You know, I have one of those relationships with Lisa where we are brutally honest with each other. And it can be uncomfortable and triggering and all kinds of things, but also so incredible. You know, there's no way that I'd take, well, that particular relationship back, because it's been so amazing for me, because I can say, hey, I'm feeling whatever, like I'm feeling invisible at the moment, or, you know, whatever I'm feeling, which is awkward conversations to have. But when you can have them with the right people, it can be really cool.
And what is great is sometimes I think about it like, the three little bears, no, Goldilocks and the three little bears. So we notice on, let's say, social media that there's this big deal about sisterhood or collaboration or something like that, and that it's perfect. And it's not. What I do believe, like any sort of partnership, including love relationships, that each engagement you have is going to teach you something, and that it will help you discern what feels true for you or what you need. And by doing so, you'll ultimately get to a place of either creating those partnerships or creating those relationships with people that you can ebb and flow through so many different places and find a deep well of learnings and love and building that happens. And for others, it's going to help you understand what you need or don't need. And then you can very lovingly say, thank you for that lesson. And now we're complete.
Yeah, absolutely. So with the collaborations that you've been doing recently, do you want to just share the kind of stuff that the kind of work that you're creating at the moment?
Sure. What am I not creating, Carly? Yeah.
That's true. We sat down, was it last week, and I asked you about something that I'd seen that you were creating, and you were like, oh, I don't remember that, because you created so much.
So, yes. So I was just speaking to some other dear friends or sisters around this morning. But so what I noticed about myself is that, yes, my work is always around sacred circle, around how to step into this place of being connected with the earth through earth medicine practices, and being very humble to the fact that we are part of something bigger and greater, which is Mama Earth that we reside on. And so if we can come together in circle, create a beautiful, magical vortex that so much information comes through. And so, and it makes it, makes life a lot more accessible. So that's my guiding principle and foundation, that women deserve and should have an opportunity and experiences where they sit in circle with other women. So that's what I do. Based on that, I have all these other ways in which you can go about that, whether it's learning a little bit or going really, really deep into it.
And you've just wrapped up the Goddess Road Trip with Julie Parker and a handful of other incredible women. What would you say were your key learnings from that experience?
So many. The first one is, if you have a dream that you have nurtured for a number of years, that it can come true. And one of them for me was to go on a road trip all around Australia. And I think it's been 4 years, and it definitely happened, and happened with a lot of ease and grace. So that's one. If it keeps coming up for you, then know that it could eventually happen. The second thing is that being on the road with 6 or 5 other women and a small 5-year-old is actually not hard. That it doesn't ever have to feel hard. That this idea of being together with women 24 hours a day for 21 days needs to be an extraordinary feat is not true. If we are all individually responsible for our own emotions, actions, thoughts, if we can be responsible in sharing what it is that our needs are while being open to where another sister is at, and we lean into our gifts, meaning when we were together, we had some sisters who were the ones who loved to cook while others loved to clean. One really knew how to organize roots. Another one loved figuring out where to eat. And we can balance that without overly giving, but instead being aware that we can let someone help us and then also rise up to the occasion when it's something that we feel called to. And that was so liberating.
For sure. Absolutely. Because, yeah, you wouldn't expect it to be smooth sailing. I know, like, from, I mean, I haven't traveled with a stack of women for a long time, and I probably should put it back on the agenda. Although I've done the retreats and but I guess maybe when I was less, you know, taking less responsibility for my own stuff, I would absolutely project that on other people. So I don't know whether it was actually the groups that I was hanging in or me that was the issue, because I'm quite sure, or, you know, or whether I'm attracting different people to me now. But like on my retreats and in our mastermind there, yeah, I guess I just allow people to come as they are without the expectations of what, you know, in the way that they should be showing up. And so, and I just show up as me, not with all the expectations of the things that I'm supposed to deliver on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which there's freedom in, and yeah. And then I guess a sense of harmony, because you're not, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is we can think of this as a conceptual thing. And then when it comes to day-to-day activities, we notice it a lot. So for example, just the other day, I was putting away dishes at a dear friend's house because I'm staying with her and her family. And as I'm putting it away, I felt like I kind of have situated myself as that's one of my duties. So some of them cook, I clean the dishes or put them away. And all of a sudden there were like 5 members of the family all surrounded, kind of helping out. And I was like, hey, don't worry about this. I've got this, right? There's always this need, this place in the back of our mind where we think, oh my goodness, someone is doing something. I should help, or there should be a fair exchange, or oh my goodness, they're going to think I'm not helping out. And this happens all the time. And so it's those little encounters in the day to day where we realize that we're still not fully healing that story of receiving and giving just at the right time. And that's what I noticed on the road trip that was really amazingly seamless, which was those little interactions when we were all living together.
Yeah, so cool. And goes to just highlight where you are now too, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely. Because I would be the first to be like, no one's helping me. What could I do? And how can I overextend?
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes. And then you're cleaning up and you're like, fucking, is somebody going to come and offer to help?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, my mum and aunties, they used to, their position at my nana's house was in the kitchen with tea towels in their hands. And I had said to myself, I won't be that person, you know, but, and, you know, I'm not the person who picks up the dishes and goes and washes them a lot of the time, but yeah, but I do know that feeling of the resentment of you doing all the things and nobody noticing the things that you're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What is next for you? What's coming up for Sora?
My vision is for this year, with all the different places of service that I'm providing, that it's truly a way for me to interact and engage with more women in person. That there's always going to be these live components that will help me deepen my relationship and also pay my respects for the women who have trusted and desire to be part of my community. So through speaking retreats, masterminds, all those things that I offer, it's really though about how can I access more and more women on a more heart-to-heart basis without overdoing it. So creating some good boundaries.
And do you feel like, you know, at the moment, is your business mostly focused on those kind of live or in-person events? It's not like you don't have much of an online component these days. Do you see yourself moving more and more towards reaching people in person?
I think that there's a way to do both. So I will always have an online presence and online offerings. I think they're, to me though, they're a way to continue a relationship and to integrate as well as call in new women who want some accessibility. So it's not just growing my tribe. It's also like, how do we maintain based on our connection live? How do we maintain that and grow deeper? And then I'll see you again. So I think there's those aspects to it, but I love online. I love being able to support women in this global way, and then finding ways to also return to places that I find is a community that I desire to be a part of.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's on the couch.
Biggest fear.
Biggest fear is that the vision that I have, I'm such a visionary, that I will let fear stop me from fulfilling it.
Yeah. And what do you struggle with at the moment?
I struggle with having my mind currently at this very moment for the past like couple of weeks, is my mind is constantly trying to uncover the deepest understanding of something. It's as if I'm my self-help book. And I'd like to just disengage from that for a moment. Yes. It's a little exhausting. It's really exhausting.
Yeah, it's like it comes in waves though, right? Like, because sometimes I'm really in it and I'm really enjoying knowing the deepest, darkest, you know, hidden parts of myself and understanding life and the universe and all that kind of jazz. And then other times I'm just like, oh, fucking shut up, please. I'm exactly. Totally over you.
I'm like, even right now, right? I mean, even watching like, I don't know, not substantial TV, I'm yeah. still like, whoa, but what about that? Yeah. And I'm still dissecting things.
Totally. I am exactly the same. Yeah. And a lot of the time I'm actually okay with it. And then other times I'm just like, bitch, please. Like, seriously.
Yes, timed out.
Yes. So I feel that struggle big time. Failure. What does failure mean to you?
Failure means not taking responsibility in living life to my fullest.
Okay, so this one, evil bitch. You know, we all have, I don't know if I'd call her an evil bitch these days. I definitely did when I started this podcast, but I feel like this question needs to change. we all have that voice inside our heads that is trying to derail us. What does yours kind of say when you're extending yourself in a bigger way?
She's very competitive and she's wondering why I haven't gotten my shit together to do the great big things, which aren't even great big things, but she's constantly trying to have me measure myself against other sisters. Quite a sister rune right there.
Yep. Yes. Yep. And success. What does success mean to you?
Success is this: when I get to do the things that I enjoy, without feeling any sort of heavy energy around it, that it really delights me. That's when I know that I'm successful. And that's an everyday process that I can remind myself. It's not this unattainable goal.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily externally driven, but more internally driven.
That's correct. Yes.
And freedom. What does freedom mean? What does it look like?
Mm-hmm. Freedom is definitely one of my core values.
Yeah, totally. I can see that in you, by the way.
And it's not, again, just an external thing about being able to travel a lot and all of that stuff. It's actually an internal place of being liberated, to be courageous enough to be me, all of me. That I love sitting and watching TV and having chips, to also eating, you know, green juice and going out for walks that slightly sometimes horrendously turns into runs, but that I could actually embrace all of me, and that's freeing.
Yeah, absolutely.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
Different things, so don't get overwhelmed. I'm a big believer in that you will find something if I resonate at all with you, and I take no offense either way. So I would say the best thing to do is to go to my website, sorasiriano.com, and just take a little peruse. Notice what feels good to you, what doesn't, what you're curious about, and then reach out and let me know.
The takeaway: exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper, and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
So if you ever find that you're really deep in a question and you know that your mind and or your ego is actually dictating the answer and you're not getting clear about what it is, I'm not a journal writer. I don't like pen and paper, but I do love computer documents. And so my invitation is just to ask a question, put it in one font, then in another font, if you're a great typist, close your eyes and just allow yourself to write without looking and notice what happens. To me, that works much better than journal prompts or writing in a journal, which I can't seem to do. So if you think that you're a failure at it, you're totally not. So just a little word of advice.
Yes. And you know, I am a person who is not a fan of blanket solutions to things, like, you know, yoga being the solution to all of the world's problems. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. I guess it depends on whether you're on the mat or not. And same goes for journaling. Like if you don't feel journaling, then you don't have to do it. You can find your own ways to connect to that voice within you. You know, for me, I used to beat myself up about the no sitting in quiet meditation, but I walk on the beach. I create space in my day. I'll float in the pool, and there, it's about knowing when you feel connected and doing more of that. So I like that idea of the heading in one font and the free writing without looking in the other. I'm going to give that a go. For sure.
Absolutely. It's all about play, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And this whole journey, you know, your whole journey, my whole journey, it has been dark and heavy at times, but also very playful. I think we're both driven by curiosity. So, yeah, that's, I guess, why we're two peas in a pod.
Curiosity and laughter.
Yeah.
Even at ourselves.
Yeah, especially at ourselves. Well, thanks so much, Sora. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into Carlosophies. If you really dug this app, I'd love for you to share it with someone who you think might also dig it. Really helps me to spread the word. And if you'd like to get to know me a little better and see some in-between app thoughts and insights and be around some super cool people, join my Facebook tribe, Show Up Speak Up. Search Show Up Speak Up in Facebook or head to carlinimmo.com/tribe. Until next time, be real, be rad. Peace out.